Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with My Opel, rewarding loyalty and taking care of members.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
It's time for our weekly gathering where we take a look at all the big stories of the week, and I'm joined in the studio by Alison O'Connor, columnist with the Irish Examiner, Breed Smith, People Before Profit TD for Dublin South Central, Liam Doran, member of the Sláinte Care Implementation Advisory Council, and Regina Doherty, Fine Gael Senator and leader of the Shannon. But first, let's take a listen to this.
My decision, and it was my decision, to ask Catherine Zappone if she would be interested in such a role, and ultimately appointing her months later, following an extensive process, was in no way corrupt or dishonest.
Minister Coveney has been caught red-handed, caught offering a salary job paid by the taxpayer to a friend, caught using the time and resources of his department to reverse engineer that role, caught covering his tracks and destroying records.
A really bruising debate. I mean, these confidence motions are very personal, and there was some hand-to-hand combat in the Dáil.
Rather than dealing with the debacle, Fine Gael were running a sting operation to expose that Simon Harris had leaked the appointment from the cabinet meeting.
Do you have evidence to back up that claim?
I only know what is general knowledge. I think if anybody has evidence, then it is Fine Gael, and they should share it.
Quite extraordinary that somebody would come into the Dáil and misuse Dáil privilege, abuse Dáil privilege. Not the first time, sadly, that this has been done by the Sinn Féin party, but it's a misuse of Dáil privilege. It was completely untrue.
Deputy Mark McSharry.
In love, I say. One well-placed source told me to dust down my Stetsons that this is very much on to bring Mr. Brooks here in September 2022.
Forget how big a star Garth Brooks was in the 90s in Ireland. He sold so many cassettes for EMI that they call it the tractor factor because farmers were buying his cassettes.
I actually thought it was very petulant of him. He was like a spoiled child.
Yeah, but you were very cross with him. You said he was disingenuous, dishonest and duplicitous.
Jeez, did I say that?
You did. You were vicious.
Vicious. Poor old Garth.
I'll just say goodnight and I'll show. All right, it's been a busy week. We'll come back to all of that in a moment, but I want to start first of all with the controversy that has erupted around Michael D. Higgins, President Michael D. Higgins' decision not to attend this event in Northern Ireland, which he says is commemorating the partition of Ireland. Alison, John Bruton on the programme earlier accusing President Higgins both of poor judgment and of being in breach of the Constitution. Where does all this go, do you think, from here?
I think, Claire, that the President might have assisted things a little bit by coming out on this earlier, maybe yesterday. But having said that, and I've given it quite a bit of thought, I found my opinion divided. But now I am of the belief that Michael D has made the correct decision. I think that his credentials on all of this are already very well established. He is not snubbing the Queen. This wasn't an invitation from the Queen. And I think there are some very fundamental issues at stake here. I think even the title marking the centenary of the partition of Northern Ireland and the formation of Northern Ireland, also in describing him as President of the Republic of Ireland. I just would simply trust his judgment. I do think it opens up a wider issue here. And I suppose I should say the mood music isn't helped by the fact that he's in Rome. I think in terms of unionists thinking of those papists, and their attitudes, that, I mean, that's just an aside. But I do think it opens up an interesting point about that period in our history and how in many ways we're almost paralysed in our analysis of it. So I think if nothing else, maybe we will start to look more at that, and hopefully not in a contentious manner. Mm-hmm. But I think ultimately I can see why he did it.
You think it was the right decision. Breed Smith, TD, you've been listening to that. I'm sure you were aware of what was going on over the course of the morning about this. Do you think he was right not to say he's not going to go?
I do. I absolutely endorse what he's saying. And it's not just the image of Michael D hanging out with papists in Rome. There's actually a lovely photograph of him on the front of the Irish Times at the grave of Antonio Gramsci, who was a fantastic socialist revolutionary in Italy during the First World War and after. And Michael Dee is a very principled man. He wouldn't make a decision like this lightly. And I don't think it's appropriate for a president to celebrate the partition of his country. As James Connolly said, it caused a carnival of reaction. Connolly predicted, and that's exactly what happened.
Regina Doherty, John Bruton completely disagrees. He says that he should reconsider his decision. He accused him of poor judgment. And he also said that under Article 13.9, he should have consulted the government on this decision and taken their advice.
So I don't agree with John Bruton, which is probably not for the first time. I think Michael D. Higgins is one of the finest men we have in this country. I think, as Breed said, he's one of the most thoughtful, considered, intelligent and respectful people that I think we've ever had in public office. And I think he's absolutely made the right decision. And for people who've said this morning that he's snubbing the Queen, I absolutely don't see any grounds for that. She didn't issue the invitation. But unfortunately, what started out as being a church service has become politicised. And I suppose maybe that's not surprising, given that everything that's to do between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland, because of the emotions, the gut instincts that we have, feelings that we have in our DNA, it brings it to an emotional level. But I absolutely think he was the right decision to make.
Has it become politicised, though?
Morning, sorry, was that the Minister for Foreign Affairs came out and said that the President did consult with him.
I'm not clear on what happened after that, because he said he didn't get any clear advice on it. So what was the nature of the consultation? I mean, is it normal that advice would be given when it comes to invitations like this? Do you know what the setup is there?
I don't. The only thing I do know and have experience of is that any time that Michael or the President needs permission to do something, that permission has to be sought by way of a government memo. And as has happened in the past, when he's going to places like today, he's in Rome. I had the pleasure of spending company or time with him when he was in Greece. Even if he was to go to Northern Ireland, there would have to be a government memo. Mm-hmm. But I've never seen during my 4 years at cabinet any other memos coming looking for permission for anything other than just leaving the States. So I don't know.
Just a message from a listener here. It's a commemorative church service with all the main churches. We either move on, respect the reality of the present and work together for a shared future on the island, respecting all traditions, or we do what the President has done, which is demonstrate that we still can't accept that there is a Northern Ireland and it's not part of the Republic. And that speaks to the point Alison was making earlier, perhaps. Liam Doran, what's your take on all this?
Well, to be honest with you, Claire, to borrow a phrase from another programme, I think the President has four yeses on this one from the panel. I fully agree. And I did reflect upon it. And my initial thing was, oh, is that going to, you know, create ripples and we don't need it? But I think every now and again, you know, something arises where we have to assert that we have certain fundamental beliefs about what happened, and to celebrate or to commemorate something that's contrary to what we would have happen, I think is fair and reasonable. He hasn't insulted the Queen in any way. She did not issue the invitation. So in a difficult situation where it's a delicate walking on eggshells type of thing, I would fully concur with the President's decision, fully support him. And, you know, without being smart, I don't think we need to take comments or lectures from anyone in the DUP or the British government about them upholding their rights and their absolute beliefs and so on and so forth. So this is one of those occasions. It is delicate. You're not going to please all the people all the time. But from where I'm standing, I fully support the President's decision.
I just want to come back to something you said, Regina. You said this has become politicised. Now, it was to be and will be a commemorative church service with the main churches involved. And they say it's grounded in peace and reconciliation. Has it become politicised because the President has refused to go?
Well, I think Dermot Farrell said on your programme earlier on that everybody obviously has the right to opt out, and that's what the President has respectfully done. But the reason it's become politicised is because politicians, both in North and here you have them now in the Republic, are commenting on it and making our views known. John Bruton is probably polarising emotions in Ireland today, making his views known.
But that's happening because the President has said, I'm not going. But as he said he was going to go, we wouldn't be having these conversations.
I don't agree with you, because I think if he had said we'd be going, we'd be having another kind of conversation giving out about him. So I actually, as our president, the President of Ireland, I think he's made the right decision.
Mm-hmm. Alison, where do you think this became politicised?
It's an interesting. I guess you could even say it's politicised with the title. Possibly, I think, with describing Michael Dee as the President of the Republic of Ireland. You know, I like I said earlier, I think maybe Michael Dee might have responded sooner rather than giving it more oxygen. But I think, look, in response to your question, even your question to Regina, this was political before it ever got off the ground. So maybe it could even have been a bit depoliticised before the invitation was sent, and the manner in which the title of it and the title used for the president. We could have an endless round of questions and answers on this. I think ultimately it probably was a difficult judgment call for Michael D. But I think that he ultimately has made the correct decision.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, as Liam Doran said, four yeses for the president from the panel here. And Liam, I want to talk to you now about Sláinte Care, because as I said at the outset, you're a member of the Sláinte Care Implementation Advisory Council, isn't that right?
Correct.
Now, Dr. Anthony O'Connor, who's also on that council, tweeted last night, "Great to see the minister," talking about the Minister for Health, "on prime time on Sláinte Care. As a council member, I've not received a single explanation, briefing or my questions answered in 9 days since Tom Keane and Laura McGahey resigned. We were due to meet tonight," that was last night, "but it was cancelled. And here we are on TV. It's an interesting way of doing business." What do you think of that?
I fully agree with Anthony. The frustration of every member of the advisory council is growing by the hour. The failure of the minister to explain how such stalwart supporters of Sláinte Care as Laura and Tom have stepped aside. Without being personal about it, I noted last night, I didn't hear last night any expression of regret from the minister about losing such two excellent people. About saying that, you know, he worked to avoid the resignations. I didn't hear any of that. I can say quite clearly to you and to all our listeners that Tom Keane and Laura McGahey are two excellent people who are really committed to a universal healthcare free at the point of access, where ability to pay does not govern how quickly you get access to care. But the council has not been asked, in my view, on critical issues of Sláinte Care. And we have been increasingly frustrated by the pace of progress or the lack of progress, and nothing the minister has done or the government at large has done or even the political system at large has done in the last 9 days would give any member of the Sláinte Care Implementation Council any comfort.
Can I ask you about the meeting that was cancelled? Were you told why it was being cancelled?
No, we just got, I don't hold me to this, but I think about 11:30 yesterday morning we got an email saying that the minister had an urgent pressing business and he was postponing the meeting till 5 o'clock this evening. And look,
and was the urgent business prime time?
I don't think so. I think he suggested last night it might have been NEFID and so on. Okay. Look, Claire, we live in the world where ministers are busy people. Meetings get rearranged. I'm not going to throw the toys out of the pram just because the meeting was put back. But Anthony is making the
point. No, but it's really important in the context of these two people resigning.
It's more important that he tells the public at large what's going on. We want to hear it firsthand, and I'll be unapologetic in saying we've tabled a number of questions to the minister this evening. We will be seeking answers to those questions. They go to the heart of why the two people resigned, why, for example, and this is a government-wide issue, Claire, the original Oireachtas report said the Sláinte Care office should be based in the Department of Taoiseach.
Yes.
This is a whole of government issue. It's a whole of country issue. It's not even a 10-year journey of change. I gently suggest to everyone, at best, it's 12 to 15 years of sustained political commitment with managerial buy-in and public acceptance that we're going to go from an unequal system to an equitable, fully accessible system. A whole of government needs to reply on this one. But yet, in those 9 days since the resignation, we have heard the Taoiseach say the Department of Taoiseach hasn't got the bandwidth to take on the Office of Sláinte Care. Well, the same Office of the Department of Taoiseach oversaw 25 years of social partnership with multifaceted dimensions to it, huge changes in social policy, all for the better and so on. So I'm disappointed at that. And ultimately, all parties bought into this, but yet in step one, if you base the Office of Change in the biggest social change that this country has seen, bringing us into a system where a health system is fair to all, not only fair to those who can afford to get consultant care or early diagnostics. That's a huge shift, bigger than even free education 67. And they won't base it in the Department of Taoiseach, which would send a signal out to the whole of government that this is going to happen. And then a cabinet subcommittee should be established, reporting every 3 months, milestones of development and implementation.
All right.
We haven't had that. But what we have had is Sláinte Care becomes some kind of unit within the department, which doesn't differentiate associated with the seismic shift is needed.
Breed Smith, do you think that this government and the Minister for Health is committed to Sláinte Care?
Well, I think the signal that's coming from the current projects, which are the biggest projects the country has ever faced in terms of health, the National Children's Hospital, for example, costing the state $1.7 billion so far, will have 8 private suites, will have a play area, will have meeting rooms, etc., for private consultancy operation in a brand new facility. And then you have no unequivocal guarantee that the new National Maternity Hospital will be fully publicly owned. These are signals being sent from a government that they are not committed to what's at the centre of Sláinte Care, which is that health will be delivered at the point of need and not according to the size of your wallet. And facilitating private care in public facilities that aren't even open yet shows you that they're bedding down on that theory rather than trying to change it. Mm-hmm. And as well as all the points Liam made about the role of the Taoiseach's department, it sends out a hugely bad signal that they're not committed to Sláinte Care.
Do you agree with that, Regina? Because all the signs seems to be, I mean, you hear Liam Doran there waiting for answers for 9 days, Dr. Anthony O'Connor saying the same thing. Those answers are not forthcoming as it stands. And also the very basic point that this should have been based in the department of the Taoiseach, and it's not.
So I tell you, so the Sláinte Care report was drawn together under Simon Harris's tenure in the Minister of Department of Health by Roisin Shortall and the whole committee. And I think it's unprecedented that it's the first time I know in the history of the state that all parties and independents agreed on the same thing. We all want the same outcome of a universal health delivery of services, as Breed said, based on need, not on your money in your pocket, right? And so there is unanimous support for it. I think the last number of months have stalled some of the most important things. When you listen to Paul Reid a couple of weeks ago saying that he acknowledges that the regionalisation of the new setup of the HSE has been stalled. What we need to hear, and I, you might get four yeses again here this morning on this topic. What we need to hear, first of all, is I don't know why we haven't moved might and main to try and get Tom Keane and Laura Mahaghy to stay running the show, to address their concerns, to say, listen, I hear you, A, B and C, D haven't been moving fast enough, but this is what we're going to do in the next couple of weeks and months to make sure that it does. And a real clear message would actually be sent
out. So the minister should beg those two to come back.
I don't know why we haven't already.
You agree, and Liam, Doran?
Absolutely. Well, it's rare you meet people who have made a difference. And Tom Keane is one of those people who has made a difference to all of our lives in this country when he led out the cancer programme in 07, 08. And we have a world-class cancer programme now, centres of excellence and so on. And all of us are better for that. All of us are better when your healthcare is good and when everybody else's healthcare is good. And Tom and Laura are absolutely committed to it. And it isn't just about, you know, politics. I don't necessarily blame, I don't blame any individual, the current minister and so on. It's since the report was published, there has been a lack of, lots of rhetoric, but a lack of real action on all of the substantive issues, such as, if you like, the regional structures, but also the consultants contract, the GP contract, the elective hospitals, investing in primary care, manpower
pandemic,
planning.
Pandemic, yeah. Can't do everything at the same time, dealing with a once in 100 year event.
A fair point as far as it goes. If you go pre-pandemic, I would be sitting here saying to you the pace of progress has been slow. When you get into the pandemic, I think it is a question of surviving the pandemic and so on. But, you know, at the same time, we have to realise that there's enough of us working out there and working for things that we can continue to work at the future, not just like we're coming out of the pandemic now and we're arguably facing the worst winter to face the public health system. And we've had some bad ones with 900,000 people on waiting list. There's already 460 odd people one day this week on trolleys in a situation where we're supposed to separate ill people and all of the rest. So we have huge immediate problems still about capacity. But we have to lift ourselves out of that because, Claire, my biggest fear is that if you're still here in 15 years' time, we'll be talking about the same problems unless once and for all, we get political buy-in, managerial buy-in and general public understanding and acceptance of Sláinte Care is the route to a very fair, equitable and world-class health system, which requires massive investment of financial terms, human terms and in managerial and political terms.
And will and commitment and all of that. Alison, is the time just not right to carry out major structural reform when we're just emerging, we hope, from a pandemic?
Yeah, but I think, and Liam is attempting to make that point there, is the time has never been right. And I've been observing the health service professionally for a long time, but I hope he doesn't mind me saying so. Liam has been observing it for even longer. And I would have a lot of respect for what he has to say. And I think if we didn't have the other political controversies that have been going on all week, this would have made a lot more news, because this is really major, the resignation of these two people. It's mega, and it's mega bad. And I don't know whether the realisation of that has quite hit the public. And even that idea that, you know, the Taoiseach saying that his department doesn't have the bandwidth, that gets to the key of it. If you have been watching health, you know, over the last decade or two, you will see that someone is appointed health minister, and generally they're sort of almost out on their own at the cabinet table, as if they have Ebola or something like that. You know, that the other ministers sort of thinking, don't want to be catching what they have, really unpopular, horrible brief, and we'll all do our own thing. Whereas if you had it within the department of the Taoiseach, as was suggested very reasonably, you would give that sense of impetus. And I'm very surprised to hear Micheál Martin say that. And another political reality is, as Liam said, this is not just to do with one minister or one personality, but there is a reality that this particular minister maybe is not that respected by his colleagues in terms of, I believe he's improved a lot in recent months, but I think a lot of people would have questioned his appointment in the first place, and would question his ability to carry this through. So I think it's hugely,
true, Regina? That's,
it's hugely
that's a really
disappointing.
Important political point, Alison, that I want to bring ask Regina about.
I can only speak for myself and maybe colleagues that have spoken to me about progress. I think he has been resounding in his support for women's health over the last couple of months. All you have to look is at some of the moves that he's made that we've been looking for years that hadn't managed to get across the line by other ministers. So I don't think that's true. I think the first point that Alison made is true, is that the Minister for Health has always been, you know, oh my God, that place is full
out
of
to one side.
Challenges and, you
what
know,
do you
issues.
Say about that point, Breed, on Minister Donnelly?
Well, I think that when you look at, you know, a series of ministers for health, there's also the department, and behind the minister is the department and the top civil servant. So it's not just the responsibility of the minister, but that other tier is not really accountable to the public. But just a couple of points. I mean, the response back about the criticism of Solange Kerr was that 100 and so many actions have already started. But there's two or three key ones that haven't. Mm-hmm. And COVID really showed us that problem. It's the ICU capacity, the waiting lists. Now, leaders often say you never waste a good crisis. So coming out of the COVID crisis, why not use this opportunity to use the health crisis, the COVID crisis and all the rest of it to utterly transform the health service and do the things we need to do. Deal with the two-tiered nature of medicine and deal with the ICU capacity immediately and also the staffing levels. That's a start they could make at the very least.
Alison, you mentioned the issues that have distracted from those resignations in Sláinte Kerr, and I want to talk about some of those distractions, because it was a clear-cut win for the government on Sinn Féin's motion of no confidence. The vote was on a motion of confidence in the end in Simon Coveney, but it's been very damaging for all involved, hasn't it?
Yeah, it was a win on the vote, but a loss in so many other areas, Claire. And I suppose I would feel genuinely worried observing it, in terms of, if you look at what the government is facing into now, the health crisis we've been talking about, housing, climate, the upcoming budget, really significant issues for all of the country. And the atmosphere at the moment is so febrile. People are exhausted before they start. And the relationships within the coalition are not good. Crankiness, distrust. And even if you look at the debate the other night, personally, I felt the atmosphere, I was watching it online, was horrible. It was sort of really visceral, even that you had the cursing from the Sinn Féin. They were almost gnarling at each other, Sinn Féin and Fine Gael. It struck me, it was like a sort of the way people talk about how vicious social media stuff can get, and there it was in real life. And I don't see that it's, I mean, I think Sinn Féin was doing what an opposition does, and they did it well in terms of bringing the no confidence motion. But we now still have all this other stuff going on when we need, at a time when we need the government to be together, this stuff about leaks from cabinet. If you even go back to Monday and the Taoiseach's interview on Morning Ireland, where it was just extraordinary, where he said that, you know, that this memo on the Zappone appointment had been in the Taoiseach's department. Do you know what reminded me of? Children on a playground. and they've had a row and they say, sorry, not sorry. And then you put your thumb up in your nose and you cock a snoop. You know, you wave your fingers. You could almost see Leo running away like that. And you think, what was the point of that?
Regina poking, Doherty is raising poking, an eyebrow, you know, an eyebrow poking the, here.
Poking, poking Fianna Fáil in the eye again. Mm-hmm. And then I looked at Simon Coveney and I actually felt quite sorry for him. The man looked sort of really upset. And I mean, he's a superb Minister for Foreign Affairs. He's done some amazing things for the country. And yet you have this, and it seems to be a very particularly Fine Gael thing, cannot accept that what he did, that he did something wrong, that there was an awful lot of arrogance in there, just can't seem to compute that and would right. almost bring his, right. in some ways, bring so much damage to his own career. And if I could just end on this final point, you then have this issue about the leaks from Cabinet and sting operations, which is continuing to convulse Fine Gael. And I just would like to point out at Matt Carty's interview yesterday on the News at One, I think Matt Carty will come to regret that, his okay. Duirt Ban Lum sort of approach, and that are these the standards that Sinn Féin, that they go on those sort of levels of things before making very okay. serious allegations.
All right. Well, Regina Doherty, Martin Conway on Drive Time last night referred to it earlier in the programme, saying that Fine Gael ministers don't leak from Cabinet. And then a couple of weeks ago, Simon Harris was on the 6-1 News saying it's unfortunate that Cabinet leaks have been happening for years. So which is it?
So there's no doubt that there are leaks from Cabinet, that the current Taoiseach has a problem with leaking from Cabinet. Leo Varadkar, when he was Taoiseach, Enda Kenny. I mean, I've sat at the table where investigations have been conducted by Martin Fraser because some people around a table decide to take other people's memo or announcements or decisions and leak them either before, during or after, and before that minister is ready to announce the announcement, whatever it happens to be. So there's no doubt there is an issue. And that issue, you know, like it's not beyond the capabilities of the clever people, the secretariat, the current secretary general, the new one, to find a way to ensure that it doesn't happen. And if it does happen, that you can find out who is accountable for it, because we do have a problem.
Mm-hmm. But Martin Conway saying that Fine Gael ministers don't leak from Cabinet. I mean, it's a bit...
Huge respect for Martin. I don't know how anybody can say that they know definitively that anybody else doesn't, because mm-hmm. that's the problem. We don't know who does it. You might have an idea of who you think did it on a particular occasion, but you can't do anything and you can't prove anything. And just because somebody tittle-tattles or gossips and says, if Breed Smith says Regina Doherty did, it doesn't make it true. If I say that Breed Smith did something, it doesn't make it true. What I do know is that if we were to articulate even a fraction of the rumours and the gossip that are subject to conversations by people in Leinster House, well, then there are people who wouldn't be able to go home to their constituencies at the weekend, that the gossip is so ripe. Now, maybe that's just our environment, but I'm quite sure it's true of other industries and professions too, right? But mm-hmm. what we need to work on is a standard of professionalism in our business. And I think that standard was really belied this week by Matt Carty, and not for the first time by Sinn Féin, by the abuse
Liam Doran
that they accept.
I've always felt in my day job, I frequently went into Leinster House and so on. To be honest with you, Claire, I think once you go past the gates there, you enter into this some parallel universe, this bubble where people are removed from reality. Reality. And I think what's been going on, like political stories say, if your last 3 days you're in trouble, this thing is now going on 3 months, yeah. Entering its third month, and we're still in trouble. Like, yes, you have to hold people to account. But leaking from Cabinet, mother of God, every Wednesday night after parliamentary party meetings now, we're getting on the 9 o'clock news. Paddy said this and Johnny said that and
different,
Mary said the
different.
Other. At parliamentary party
That's
meetings.
Different.
Yeah, but in the Dáil you have, you know, leaking from Cabinet is obviously different, but it's gone on ad nauseum for as long as I can remember studying politics. Media reporters will seek out ministers and so on. And so on. It's very, but the point I'm trying to make is all of this time is being spent and wasted by our leaders, our democratic leaders, when there are so many real problems facing this country that I think the general public has despaired. I think most people have decided the Zappone thing was an error. It was a jobs for the boys. It was set up, and that error was compounded by, you know, denials and all the rest. Okay. But they're now saying to people, get on with their
right.
job.
Breed Smith, I want to bring you in here because I was reading Stephen Collins today in the Irish Times, and he says the government won the vote comfortably the other night because a wide range of independents were not prepared to be used as patsies for Sinn Féin. What do you think of that?
I don't believe that's the way I would have seen it. I'm not an independent. I'm with People Before Profit.
I know that, yeah.
But I certainly wouldn't see it as a patsy for Sinn Féin. what I see my role in there is being a voice for people. And even coming in here in the taxi today, the taxi driver was furious about the cronyism that takes place. And that's what bit people's bum over this event, was that it was clear cronyism, jobs for the boys and girls, the insider stuff. It goes on all the time and we're all aware of it. But when it's cut out and when it's called out, people have a right to be furious, and their anger needs an expression. Mm-hmm. And that's why I would have voted no confidence in Simon Coveney, and for other reasons. The bags he made of housing when he was minister, and also, very shockingly, how he has behaved over the women of honour and sexual abuse within the ranks of the military. He is, after all, more or less chief of staff as the Minister for Defence, and before him it was Leo Varadkar. Mm. How have they turned a blind eye to this stuff as well?
What about the vibe in the Dáil the other night, described as ugly, vicious?
Well, it reminded me, and I haven't done many of them, but I've done a few debates in colleges, you know, in Trinity for, you know, debating societies, where first years come out and practice their public speaking skills, and then either side of the house slag each other and roar and shout at each other. They were like children, to be honest with you. I had very little respect for what I saw.
All right. On that note, we're going to have to leave it there. But thank you all very much indeed. We'll take a break.
Today with Claiborne. Listen back on the RTE Radio Player app.